Tonight's not going to be completely the normal way I do things. Usually I teach the Hebrew and the Hebrew word pictures and precepts. Tonight's going to be at least two-thirds living the precepts. And I'm going to give you some very practical counseling precepts that I've learned the hard way. Let me tell you what that means. Over 20-some years of counseling, when you try to show a biblical precept that I've learned by God dragging me through the bushes or pushing me over the cliff or something else, and I needed it, and then you... There are two parts, by the way, I know this is jointed, of a miracle. The first part of every miracle is to desperately need it. Otherwise, it wouldn't be a miracle. The second part is when that desperate need is fulfilled in God. And much of my desperate need, God has fulfilled by His miracles. And so these are simple precepts. They were not simple to find. It took me a long time to refine them, to communicate them in simple ways, but they're simple. So we're going to do the five friendships. Wait until we pop up. And we're going to walk through, as we start, we're going to get to the simple things in a while. I'm also going to show you how to read some ancient Hebrew words, because every letter is very easy for an American English reader to read. So we have the Hebrew alphabet. Many of you have seen me do this before, but let's go through it again. Starting on the right, Hebrew goes from right to left. It's not backwards because it came first, and to me that explains English. We have our A, B, C. What comes next? D and E. Do you see that? Our letters came from the ancient Hebrew Phoenician Aleph Bet. You can even see where we get our alphabet from. Alphabet's a name in Hebrew. Those are the letters. So Aleph became our letter A. Today we only pronounce the vowel. It used to be a glottal stop. You know what that means? You hear it when you listen to the Cockney accent in England when they go, not bottle, but bottle. It's when the vocal cords, the glottal stop there, stops. You hear it in words like o'clock. It's just that stopping for 1 second. And no, it's no longer used as the glottal stop, because when the Jews from Europe came to Israel, when they resurrected the language, the glottal stop was too hard to pronounce. So today you just say the vowel that goes with the aleph. So when you see the A, just, it's not so hard from English. We think that vowels look like they're absolute, but tell me, what's the vowel sign in the word T-O-M? How do you say that word? The name? What's the vowel? Ah, A, out of an O. So don't tell me English makes sense. You know, here, in this case, we're going to see it can be an A-E-I-O-U. And quickly, you learn which one it is. You will read it like you do in English. It'll make sense. It's a picture of the head of an ox. It symbolizes what is strong. And like the Alpha and Omega, in Hebrew, Aleph means what is first. Bet became our letter B. Can you see that? It's often softened to a V sound, just like Spanish. And if you listen, b and v, v, they're very close together. One is hard, one is soft. It's a picture of a tent or a house. You know it as in Bethel, Bethlehem. It symbolizes a family, what is inside. The word father, what letters do you see? Aleph and Bet, what do they become in English? A and B. You guys are reading this, aren't you? You can read the word. It's A, B, ab, or soften the B, it becomes av. Is this hard to read? If we just took them that way, we could teach you hundreds of words easily that you, with very little effort, could read. Together they paint a picture that describes a father or God the Father as the strength or the leader of the house. It doesn't mean that every father is that. It means every father is called to be that. And that does not mean, put balance in here, that a father is called to be the tyrant or the dominator of the house. The Hebrew concept of leading is the one who goes first. And God had to call me on that. He said, if you want Sally to be humble, you want her to give, you want her to love, you lead. That means, Frank, you be humble, you give, you serve, you love. And if I'm telling Sally to be humble and I'm not humble, I'm dictating to her one thing and leading another. Often I'll have men come to me, a couple come to me in counseling, and they're wonderful believers, messianic or Christian, and they come to me and they tell me their problems. And the husband then says, the real problem in our marriage, after he says he's hurt, he's becoming bitter, he's becoming even a little mean. She says she's hurt, she's becoming bitter, she's becoming a little mean. And then he says, Frank, the problem is my wife won't follow me. So I tell him, wait a minute, if she's hurt, bitter, mean, and you're hurt, bitter, mean, and if her job is to follow you, she's doing her job. Right? And there's a shock on his face, and about half the time they get it, and half the time they don't like what they're hearing, because they still want her to follow him the way he's not going. And that's not biblical, is it? Resh is the picture of the head. This is the ancient Proto-Canaanite. Can you see that? Simplified to that one, means a person, means that what's high. They came our letter R. The modern letter even looks like our small letter R. Ayin is an I. It's the name of the letter, Ayin, I. What letter did it become in English? Became our O. It, like the Aleph, is no longer pronounced. It was a guttural, back of the throat, not a strong one, but just a sound. But now we only, because the European Jews couldn't pronounce it, the Jews from the Arabic worlds could, you know, we only pronounce the vowel with it. The word for a friend is pronounced, you see the R? The R, and then an A sound here. It's re'a. And you see the picture, it's the head of a person and an eye, the person you see. It means a friend, a neighbor, the one you see. The Bible says a man of many friends must show himself friendly. So I say, you see and you like, that's the real friend. If you see your neighbor and don't like each other, you're not fulfilling the role of a neighbor, are you? And when Yeshua spoke, they said, who is our neighbor? Because we're told to love our neighbors, aren't we? When Yeshua spoke and said, here's the example, and he did the Good Samaritan. Read it. And the Samaritan saw the priest. And he cared for him. Who's the neighbor? The one we see. Makes it pretty simple to me. Or maybe pretty difficult. Het is the picture of offense, became our letter H. Can you see that? It sounds like the ch sound in Bach or Lach. Now let me help you say this. How many have heard, have the way you pronounce the het in Hebrew, and this is the only way I know to teach it, is you teach it as if you are to children. You go, ah, try it. Now let's do it like the British aristocracy. Go, ah. You've got it. Because we, it's difficult. It's not our letter. You have to overdo it to bring it back. Like many precepts. So the word for brother is, we just did it, ah, ah. And it's the Aleph Het, the first or the strong fence. They are the protectors. make this word feminine, it becomes the word for sister. You want to know who your brothers and sisters are in life? There is your family brothers and sisters, a brothers born for times of adversity. And there are people in Hebrew, like in English, this means the people of our lives who are relationally close and protect us. Your brothers and sisters are the ones that protect you. Do you see one of the reasons why God hates gossip? It destroys brothers and sisters. The bosom in Hebrew is where you hold a child. It's almost like our lap, but it's just that place of being held and embraced and loved. A bosom, and it's and v, if you will, or hov or chav. And then the resh, the picture of a man. This becomes the word chaver, comrade, partner, close friend. Have you heard of koinonia in the Greek, fellowship, partnership? The equivalent in Hebrew is chaverot. This is the word used for fishermen who partner together. And we're going to talk about these three friendships for a second, because I use this in a lot of counseling. The haver, the sharing and partnering, where I share my heart, soul, fears, hopes, shames with somebody. We all want that, don't we? That connection. And in America, we try to skip the first two and jump to the third. But everyone here is old enough. Let me ask you a question. What's happened to you in the past when you shared your heart, soul, fears, hopes, shames with somebody that did not have time for you, did not like you, or did not protect you? What happened? You're crushed. You're destroyed, right? So here's the basic rule, and understand it. As there's one exception, the exception is ministry. I can stand up here and share my heart, soul, fears, hopes, and shames with 1,000 people. But that's not a one-on-one relationship. And you can share that in ministry, but in relationship, the first two, I'm called to do always. I'm called to be friendly, to see people, even if it's only for 1 second. I'm called to protect people always. When people come to me for counseling, one of the rules I tell them, because many come in the midst of a nasty divorce, and I tell them, if you guys go to court for divorce, I will not testify against any of you. Everything you say is safe here. Now you have to realize I've been taken before judges and threatened to go to jail for that. But there's two reasons I've never gone to jail. It's got nothing to do with pastoral confidence or counseling confidence. It's that we made it a contract. And two, I never take notes. I do it for two reasons. One for that reason, and one if I have to ask you 5 times before I really know, I'm going to ask. I don't want to know you by the notes. I want to know you. So here's the bottom line. The first two are me giving. But I never have the third friendship where I open my heart, soul, fears, hopes, dreams, shames to somebody unless they give me the first two. Does that make sense? The first two carry the weight. Without the first two, the third one is a false fantasy. And the first two, whether they do it or not, I'm going to do. Because if I don't become the person who gives the first two, when I run across somebody who will give me the first two, I've got nothing to give back, do I? We're not done there. Is this different from what you've been taught so far in our culture? I'm going to tell you how to become best friends in powerful ways. There's another word. Now that we've got, this is the letter He, it means behold. Can you see the picture of a man or a woman with their hands up? Saying just in Hebrew, the same thing it means in English, He. By the way, do you know how you torture an Israeli? This matters in the language. Same way you torture, I was taught this by Italians, the same way you torture an Italian. You tie their hands behind their backs and talk politics. You cannot speak Hebrew without your hands. Right? I don't, because God made it so the language is meant to be that way. Hey. It's not the way I'm half Swedish. They're, you know, jag kan tala lite svenska. You know how you can tell when a Swede gets angry? They raise both eyebrows. You know, there's not, yeah, maybe, you know, maybe they have an itchy eyebrow, maybe they're angry. We'll find out later. It became the picture of a lattice work window. Do you see that? They didn't have glass. You wanted to keep birds and animals out. You had to have lattice work. It became a letter E. In Hebrew, it's still the H sound. Modern Hebrew, do you still see the open window in the letter He? This is the word ahav, ohev. It's a friend. It means love. Abraham was the friend of, God was a friend of Abraham. Jonathan, David were friends. And part of this kind of friendship says, all that I have is yours, all that you have is mine. And it works in partnership. This, by the way, this is the kind of friend that calls you at 2 in the morning, 500 miles away, they're broke down, they're broke, they're in trouble, you get in the car and drive. But so if we take a part of life and say, okay, in 10% of our lives, we're going to start a partnership here. To make that partnership thrive, we have to say to each other, all that I have is yours. Here, right? Otherwise, will the partnership work? No. So in America, in romantic relationships or in dating, we get to the point, or in friendship, because it's all the same, we get the point that we can start sharing our heart and soul, but then are you willing to pay a price? And if you pay the price, there is one more. This is the word ahav. Now we have the door, which became our letter D. Then vav, the nail, became our letter U and V. Do you see the very top of the vav? A little U, a little V. That became our letter U, our letter V. And as a sound, it's U, O, and V. Became actually, from this we got our word, our W as well, which is its two U's, stretching out the sound. And now we get the word Dode. I put an H in here so people would not mistake it as dude or, you know, this is Dode. Actually, and dude works. And you've heard this one, Ani le Dodi ve Dodi li. I am my beloved's is mine. It's also the word for uncle. This is a tribal language, extended family. It Doda becomes the word for an aunt, Dodon, a cousin. They are the beloved's. But this, as the beloved, is the fruit of a tree. Let me describe it to you. Imagine you're 15 years old. You have an uncle and an aunt that you like, you spend time with, they like you, they protect you, you're safe. You open your heart and share your heart and soul with them, hopes, fears, dreams, shames. They open their heart and share their heart and values with you. And they turn to you at 15 and say, whatever it takes, our work, our time, our connections, our money. Whatever it takes for you to succeed in life, we will pay that price. what would your reaction be? Could you run into their arms and at least inwardly, if not outwardly, say, I belong to you? Do you see the fruit we're looking for in marriage and romance and friendship is the fruit of four other friendships? Does that make sense? And the fruit of the third friendship, which is more of a fruit there too, is the fruit of the first two friendships. 90% of the weight is the first two, to spend time, to be likable, and protect. When that naturally becomes the third one of a partner, of a comrade, then you pay the price of pain so the partnership becomes effective and deep. And then you turn around and you're beloved. Do you see why I like Hebrew? Little circles and ladders. Now is what I call practical, living out Hebrew. This is less Hebrew than it is counseling, but it's counseling I've learned through Hebrew. Okay. I believe there are thousands of dialects in the world, but only two languages. I believe Chinese and English are dialects. I believe Manish and Womanish are languages. And it's cute, but it's real. Because a woman from China can come and speak to a woman from America about their husbands with broken communication, and they will understand each other, right? They go home to their husbands with perfect Chinese and perfect English. They cannot communicate it. Because Chinese, Spanish, and English are one reality communicated with different words and grammar. Manish and Womanish are two different realities communicated with the same words and grammar. It's almost like you've heard the difference between British English and American English. You know, they're one, the Brits and the Americans, they're one people divided by a common language. What's a bonnet mean in America? A woman's hat. What's a bonnet mean in England? The hood of a car. It's not the same reality. But that's easy to overcome because there's still a hat and the head of a car. But here's Manish Womanish 101. Are you ready? Circles and ladders is what I call it. Every woman understands what it feels like in relationships and in life to be inside or outside the circle. How many men here have had 11-year-old daughters or sisters? What happens when you get two 11-year-old girls together for a weekend? They're best friends, they bond, they share. What happens, everybody, when you get three 11-year-old girls together? Two are in the circle. One is out of the circle. Is that true for 11-year-old boys? No. If the 11-year-old boys like each other, three, five, seven, odd numbers are okay. Do you ever put girls together in odd numbers? It's the circle. Every man understands what it feels like in life and in relationships to be at the top or the bottom of the ladder. This is not if he's a CEO or the janitor. A CEO can be treated at the bottom of the ladder. A janitor can be treated like the top of the ladder. This is relationship. And this is what happens. I've noticed three generations ago, if there was a divorce, one of the two people was a scoundrel. Today, most divorces are really good people with really bad marriages. And here's one of the reasons why. You take a woman, she starts off telling a man how she feels out of the circle and all the things he's doing to put her out there. But when she's speaking, he doesn't see a circle. What does he hear? He hears her tell him that he belongs at the bottom of the ladder and everything he's doing wrong makes him bad and worthless. Women, is that what you're saying? Men, is that what you're hearing? Interesting, isn't it? Women are saying how she doesn't feel heard and loved and understood and cared for because she thinks he understands the circle. And he hears how he can do nothing right, he might as well give up, he's no good, he's worthless, which is not what she's saying. So she doesn't see the ladder. And what he does, and this makes every woman here's experienced it, he defends himself. No, that's not what I said. You're taking it wrong. Here's what really happened. Women, have you ever wondered why you tell him you're hurt and he defends himself and argues? Has it ever made sense? What does she hear? She doesn't hear him defend the ladder. She hears him say that she's hurt and he doesn't care. And at that point, we have two good people hurting the other person in their deepest heart. And neither one tried to do it. The Bible tells every man to love his wife. I'm going to change the word. How many women here know what cherishing means? Everyone who's willing to raise, every woman does. Every 13-year-old girl does. I've done marriage counseling. The 13-year-old girl understands cherishing. Women, not men, don't raise your hands. Women, how many think many men understand cherishing? Unless they're, no one raised their hand that I saw. Unless they're trained, we don't understand it because no one's taught us the circle. I actually did a class with about 50 men and I asked them, what does it mean to cherish? Would you like to know their response? We put about 50 words down, figured it out, ended up with one example. Here's the example. Cherishing to a man is like having a 1957 T-Bird. Right, guys? You care for it. Air conditioned, heated garage, oil that's, you know, this and this and this and this. It was, what cherishing is to men, we put it at the top of the top of the ladder. But women, is there any relationship in that example? And what men don't know is cherishing to a woman is when they're in the midst of the center of the circle. Do you know how easy it is to speak Manish and Womanish? Do you know you all do it fluently? You don't believe me, do you? Let me ask you a question. Men, how do you speak to a 2-year-old girl? Tenderly? Using emotions? Lovingly? Women, how do you speak to a 2-year-old boy? Come on, big guy, you can do it. You're so strong. Why? Why do we do it with 2-year-olds and we have no clue with adults? So here's a simple secret. Your spouse is not a 2-year-old, but that same inner heart of every woman at 2 to be cherished is still there. You speak to the 2-year-old heart, but the adult woman. The man is not a 2-year-old, but that same inner heart to be viewed as the big guy, you can do it with respect, is still there. You speak to that 2-year-old heart, but an adult man. And you do it every time you talk to a 2-year-old, don't you? So it's not that we don't know how. I actually think it's easy to know how, but our culture has destroyed our understanding. So I remember a time, how many men here know the verse, to live with your wife with, what's the rest? Understanding. I remember years and years and years ago, decades and decades ago, being part of a Christian counseling ministry, and every Monday they had a men's lunch, and the leaders there took that verse, and here's what they taught me. They said, this does not mean that you have to understand your wife, because no man can. This means you have to treat her, make her feel that you understand her. Here's my belief. When I heard this, this is my belief then. They were wrong. When Jesus called Peter to walk on water, the moment he told him to walk to him, the impossible became possible. If the Bible tells a man to understand his wife, whether that's naturally easy or a miracle hard, it's possible. So what I'm going to do here for a moment, I need a volunteer, and a wife can shove, I need a good-hearted man. And how many men have had their wives say to them, you're not hearing me? Okay, I'll come to the man later. How many men have you ever heard that? And I've turned to my wife and said, yes, you're saying A, B, C, D. What do you mean I'm not hearing you? I would like a woman to come forth, come up here, and I want to show men what it means to hear a woman. Can we have a mic? Can we turn this one on? Is there a woman willing to be a volunteer? Come on up. Thank you. Come on up here. Come on up. Is there a way we can turn this on? It's on. This is easy. It's natural. It's not going to be at all difficult, I promise. This is the way.
I just have to keep a straight face.
What?
I just have to keep a straight face.
Don't have to.
You have hit on so many things of which we're guilty.
Okay. Does she need her mouth closer to the mic, or is that fine?
Am I good?
Perfect.
Okay.
I want everyone to hear.
All right.
Women know how to speak to women and be heard. The men here have no clue. Okay. Men, what am I holding in my hand? A bottle of water. Is this you? Is it me? Is it us? Or is it the bottle? The more fascinating this bottle is, the better our conversation, right? If this was a 2,000-year-old Roman plastic bottle with $150 worth of Tibetan spring water, we as men would have an incredible conversation. The moment I talk about this bottle of water to a woman, it is no longer a bottle of water. Do you know what it is? I'm no longer fascinated by this. I'm fascinated by her. Watch. This is easy. This is just a silly bottle of water. So it's nothing big. But when you look at this bottle of water, what do you think about it?
It quenches my thirst when I drink it.
Okay, do you like the shape, the color?
The shape is good, the color is okay.
But nothing, okay.
It's not outstanding, it's what it would do for me, not what it looks like.
What colors do you like? What shapes do you like?
I like red.
When you see dark red, light red?
Candy apple red.
Candy apple. When you see that, what do you feel?
Oh, my emotions are quadrupled.
Happy, excited?
Happy.
Okay. Any other, do you like yellow?
It's all right.
All right.
Not passionate.
So what about shapes? Do you like the a French cut kind of wine glass? Do you like etched glass?
I like crystal.
Crystal. Simple or elegant?
Elegant.
What about furniture?
Simple. Comfortable.
So more like British countryside than French elegance.
I call it all American comfortable.
Something you can just disappear in when you sit.
You're right. Take a nap.
If you were to go to any place in the world, we're not going to include Israel. Okay, that's just too easy here. Any place in the world you've not been, where would you go?
Where I've not been?
Yeah. Or again, except for
Ireland.
Israel. Ireland?
Ireland.
My wife too. That's where she wants to go. So I will go with her to watch her face in delight. You know, Ireland is kind of a mid place for me, but for Sally, it'd be a 10 out of 11 out of 10. It'd be a 10 out of 10 just watching her for me. Why Ireland?
It's part of my heritage, and the stories, whether they're fiction or nonfiction, draw me in. The way they face problems, the way they've solved problems, mm-hmm. is just, it speaks to my emotions.
Okay, so let me ask you a question. This has just been short. You know, like it usually should go much longer. Do you feel I've heard you a little bit? Do you feel a little more connected?
Oh, you haven't hurt me at all.
Heard.
Heard? Oh, I left my hearing aids.
That's okay.
Pardon me. You've heard. You've listened to what I've said.
Yeah. Do you feel like...
You've repeated a few things, so you're listening.
I'm hearing. And do you hear my heart hearing? Do you feel a little connection?
I feel a connection. You're yeah. willing to make eye contact.
Oh, yeah. We'll tell the men about that, too.
Okay. Okay.
But thank you. This is just a guinea pig thing. We're going to pick on men, too. So, men, what did you see? Women, is this right? Is this how you hear a woman? You're fascinated by her thoughts, her feelings. And men, did you notice I could take her any place I wanted to in conversation? Right? But what was different? I cared about her thoughts. Why did she like candy apple red? Every woman here knows what I just did, don't you? Nobody teaches the men. And it's not the way men do it with each other, is it? And so I do my best. I had my favorite brother, there's seven kids. My favorite brother lives in Redmond. He came down yesterday. We spent some time with each other. I love talking to John. He's an awesome man. But when I talk to John, I can speak pure mannish. And sometimes I will forget and talk to John for an hour on the phone, and 30 seconds later be out where Sally's at, and I'll say something in pure mannish, and then I go, oh, she's not a man. It's not the bottle of water that matters. It's what she thinks and feels about it. And men, here's a secret you don't know. Ever listen to women talk on the phone for 20 minutes, and she's talking, and then she's saying, and she's quiet mostly for 20 minutes? Do you know what's happened? Women all know this. You just never had somebody put it in as clear English, maybe. What's happening is one woman is hearing and pulling out and caring and interested, and then after she feels heard, and I didn't have the 20 minutes to do all of that, they flip it. So anytime you want your wife to really hear what you're saying, pull out until they feel heard, they will flip it. If they don't think you're hearing and you're talking, then you're talking down to them, you think they're stupid, you're correcting them, you're hurting them. They can't hear you. Women, is this true? Sally's the smartest person I know. But when I talk to her like a man, she thinks I think she's stupid, and I'm telling her to shut up, and I'm not thinking either one. But she feels it. Does this help it a little bit? Men, do you have something practical to work with? This is what, I tell every 18-year-old man to practice this on his mom and sister. They're safe. If there's women, and there's women in your lives, if we don't do this, if you don't learn this, you can't teach the next generation. What would happen if every 15-year-old boy understood this? By the way, I won't get into that, I don't have time. Now I need not a woman, but a man. And here's what I'm going to teach. How many women believe that in a few minutes, I can have a man who's not used to sharing emotions. If I had 15 minutes, he'd be spilling his guts. Did you know that? Did you know how easy it is to get men to share their heart of hearts and emotions? Sounds like a miracle, doesn't it? It's a simple thing. I need a good-hearted man who's willing to come up and be a guinea pig. Some wife, give him a kick. Good, we've got a brave warrior coming up. And in the same way, this is too short. This is it. This is a sample, not a meal. And your name is?
Chris Wise.
Thank you, Chris. Are there times your wife comes up to you and asks you what you feel, and the answer is, I don't know?
Yeah.
Has she ever asked you what you feel? And women, when you ask a girlfriend, what does she feel? What does she tell you? 3 to 5 emotions. When you ask more men what they feel, what do they tell you? I don't know, or about what? Right, guys? Makes sense to us. I'm going to show you what he's trying to tell you and how it's a door to his heart. Here's the bottom line before we talk. If you talk to a man about a significant issue, a man who gives no emotions, but you talk politics or his sports team, they lose the ball, they get the ball, how many emotions do you see in that man? Because that's going the way men were created to go, from significant issue to an open heart. Make sense to you, kind of?
Yeah.
So growing up, what significant issues matter to you? Hunting, sports, travel, anything?
Sports.
Okay.
Anything with wheels.
Anything with wheels.
Wheels or skis or skis? Water.
What was the best, was there really a great time in skiing or wheels or water? One exceptional time in life you can think of growing up or any time?
Yeah, I grew up in Alaska.
Where?
It was awesome. Anchorage.
Okay.
Yeah.
Got a brother in Fairbanks, by the way. They love Alaska.
Yeah, my brother and sister both live up in Anchorage.
Okay. So tell me, give me an example in Alaska.
Well, I went up to, I remember my first trip up. It was an epic
snow day. A little bit closer.
Epic snow day. I was 13 years old, and I had new skis, and mm-hmm. they were the clip-in bindings. They're like the old spring style. I don't know if you guys know what these are, but it was old school. And I was 13 years old, 5 foot, and I had big, tall skis. And my friends, they conned me into going to the very top of Mount Alyeska, chair one. And I'm not kidding, it snowed 5 feet of fresh powder.
Wow.
And so they took off. They're all good skiers, and they left me, see ya. So I headed down. I went a little ways, crashed. I was bawling by the time I got down a little bit.
So. By the time you got to the bottom, give me the emotions you felt going down.
Yeah, I was really scared. Ticked off at my friends.
What?
I was ticked off at my friends.
Anger?
Yeah.
Fear?
Yeah, yeah.
When you got to the bottom, were you proud? Relieved?
Yeah, I swore off skiing. Then I discovered chair four, which was like the bunny hill.
Okay.
And
I had a great time. I see you're married.
Actually, I'm divorced. Daddy told me to put this on a year and a half ago.
Good enough.
Quit looking for a wife. So.
Okay, good enough. When you were married, did you ever feel those feelings in the marriage?
Did I what?
Ever feel the anger, fear, despair, the same feelings you felt going down? Did you ever feel those in marriage?
Oh, yeah.
Like when?
When I felt like I wasn't being listened to.
Okay, so let me stop right here. Thank you, by the way. This is a sample. You're a brave man. You're a good man. Yep. But let me ask you one question. You can just wave your hand. Were those emotions hard for you to connect with?
Easy for me.
Easy. Yeah. Men, with those would have been easy for any man here, right? Why? Women, do you see why? Let me give you a secret. Are you ready? What emotions are to women, issues are to men. Did you know, And Saturday night, you know, we did a young adults group. And I just sat there with a whiteboard. And it was kind of fun because one of the men, probably about 6 to 10 times, I would say something and he'd go, "What?" And I'm going to say one of the things he said what to. Men are more controlled by emotions than women. Easy. Do you know why? Because for a woman, it's an emotion. For a man, when we hear the emotion, we hear a decision. A woman says, "I am angry." Will she necessarily be angry in 5 minutes? When a man hears a woman say, "I am angry," he hears her say, "I've thought about it, I've decided, and I'm angry." So when we hear emotions 10 to 100 times stronger than women say them. And it's the decision we react to. We try to pacify it, stop it, divert it, keep it from going off the cliff, avoid it. When women hear an issue, when men talk issues, we're doing the same processing. So when a man says to another man, "I'm thinking about moving to Alaska," the other man will do what women do with emotions. They'll pull it out. "Tell me, what is there about Alaska you're interested in?" If he says to his wife, "I want to move to Alaska," what does she do? Tries to kill it, divert it, avoid it, pacify it. She hears a decision, doesn't she? So when a man, for men, an emotion is something much stronger. It controls, it's the decision that controls. A man may only have one emotion in 5 years, but it controls him. Does that make sense? So when five women are in a room, a girlfriend walks in the room and says to the five girlfriends, "I am so mad." What do the girlfriends do? They go to her. "Are you okay? What happened? Tell us about it." A woman walks in the room with five men that are friends and family and says, "I am so mad," and we all try to leave. Because honestly, we're all afraid she's mad at us. But, you ready for the simple secret? A woman walks in the room and speaks to men with issue first. And says, "I was just cut off in traffic, almost killed. I am so mad." And now every man goes to her. "Are you okay? What happened? Tell us about it." Right, guys? Issue before emotion. Now let's flip it. Men, have you ever tried to tell your wife about an issue you want her to listen to? Like you want to expand the company or build something in the house or whatever else? You ever try to do that and you just run into barbed wire? So imagine a 25-year-old man and a 25-year-old woman just getting started off in life. If he came home and said to his wife, "I have an opportunity to buy 10 trucks, get 20 employees, and just go for it." What's the average wife going to say? Right? Stop. But let me paint the picture differently. And women, you're going to tell me what the average wife would say then. The man comes to the wife and says, "Honey, I've been thinking about us and our future kids and our life together. And I would like to come to the point that every summer, with the kids growing up, we can disappear for 2 months on a lake with our own cabin and no work. And I'd like to have that for our kids and grandkids, and we can pay for them to take off work for 2 months every year. But we could never do that with the money we're going to have. We're going to have to find a way to really expand it. So I've been looking. I've run across an opportunity for 10 trucks, 20 employees. What do you think?" Now what's the wife thinking? "May not be this opportunity, but we're going to find one," right? You give her the relationship, she can hear the issue. Is this difficult? We've lost it. No, I can show you all this in Hebrew. I can show you all this in Scripture. It's there. But we tend to read Scripture with a European mindset. We don't read it these ways. I was talking to one of my old high school friends. I had a time meeting with Reggie. I've not seen him in 40-some years. He's the great-grandson of Chief Joseph. And as we were talking about certain precepts in Hebrew and tribal things, he said, there's a word in Nespirs for a little 2-, 3-, 4-year-old child that's out of control. And he told me the word, and he said, here's what it means. It means no grandmother. It's a relationship word, isn't it? The word that I see in Hebrew for anger and hatred, the picture is no father. Fear, no mother. Part of what we need to realize is that Hebrew is lived out in relationships. That if you can tell me what love means and you've not learned to do it the way we're taught, the way that works, the intellectual isn't, you don't understand the Hebrew biblical mindset of love. If you learn the word, then learn to live the word, and then you'll understand the word. Men are told to love, to cherish their wives. I've just given you some simple tools to practice with. I want you to sit down with your wife and start asking her why she likes red or green or blue. What she thinks of. Don't debate with her politics. Why does she like and not like this politician? And sometimes they're fascinating reasons. You're listening to the politics and you love them. She's watching the person. And there's something wrong in their character. And don't debate. Pull out. And then when she flips it on you and she wants to know yours, then don't debate. You debate with men, that's fine. The bottle of water is not me, it's not you, it's not a man. I can debate with any man about this and nobody's hurt. Unless I do it in a hurtful way. I cannot debate with my granddaughter, my daughter, or my wife, or any woman about this. And it's not that they're children. They're often much more mature than we are. It's that they're women. But you cannot get any man, woman, to share his emotions. You know what the worst... Sometimes when I'm counseling with a pastor, a Christian pastor, I will tell him that my definition of Protestant purgatory is being a pastor. Because you're on your way to heaven, it only feels like hell. Now, if you want a man to experience purgatory, you put him in the room of three beautiful, wonderful 80-year-old women who are just going to ask him what he thinks and feels, and they're going to care and love, and these sweet women within half an hour he's going to want to kill. And not because they're not sweet and loving, because he can't. But you sit that same, if you talk to pastors, many of them learn to golf. Do you know why? Because as we're walking next to a man, talking about business, talking about issues, talking about golf, the man's heart opens. Interesting, isn't it? If you want a man to open his heart, value the issues. Guys, let me tell you a secret. You want her to care about the issues when you come home from work? Do not say, I met with Tom today. We talked about A, B, C, and D. You've lost her on, we talked about A. But women, what would happen if he came to you and said, I met with Tom today, I'm excited and scared? What do you say? What do you ask him? What happened? Women are now asking for the issue. Isn't that a miracle? And how hard was it? And by the way, men, it's hard for men to do this. They'll start to say, I met with Tom today. I'm excited and scared because we can't just put an emotion out there without an issue. So here, let me say it to you again, men. I met with Tom today. I'm excited and scared. Shut up. I'm not being rude. I'm trying to brand it in your mind. Don't add to it, because if they ask back, it's a relationship. If you tell them, it's a lecture. You can say amen, women.
Amen.
Women, you want him to care about emotions? Tell him the reasons. There were two politicians that did a great job of manish and womanish. And I'm taking both sides on purpose. Ronald Reagan and Bill Clinton. If you listen to them, they gave you the great cause and the emotion. And women could hear the heart and the emotion and grab the cause. Men could hear the cause and go for the emotion. They understood both. And if you want to speak to the other gender, you speak their heart language. I can take you through scriptures. If we had an entire conference to do this, I would do it with you. But just so the men understand, women, is what I'm saying true? Raise your hands if it is. Just for the men to see. Men, is what I'm saying true? Raise your hands for the women to see. Raise it high. Everybody see that? This is truth. It's simple. You ever drive on snow and ice? Remember the first time that somebody taught you how to drive on ice and you had to steer into the skid? Everything, it seemed wrong, but it works. And after a couple times, it feels right? This is what it's going to be like. It's going to feel wrong, but it works. Every man's going to say, I don't want to start with emotions, but that's the only way to their heart, for them to understand, for them to process. You give a woman an issue, she hears a decision, and the wall goes up. It's not her being selfish or stubborn or wrong. It's the way God made her. Fight with God. If you start with an emotion to a man, his wall goes up. He can't process it. Even if he doesn't want the wall up, it's like, listen to my phrase. Let me tell you, listen, it's the green, interesting, fascinating, slippery, awkward. What am I talking about? That's what it sounds like when women do emotions and men do issues. You're waiting for me to say what I'm talking about. I could be talking about a politician, a puppy, a two-year-old, right? And until you hear me say what I'm talking about, every other word can't connect. So you say to a woman, I met with Tom today, I'm excited and scared. You've connected. Now the issues make sense. You say to a man, I was cut off in traffic, almost killed. Now the emotions make sense. Now here's the thing. A man can learn to translate it. A woman can learn to translate it. But it takes me about half to 75% of my effort to translate it so my heart gets there. And I'm usually about 5 minutes behind what Sally's saying. With my best efforts, and I'm good at it. It's just much easier not to make them translate. Right? Men, Your wife needs 2 to 5 girlfriends that she can share in womanish, that you can trust her to share 99% of everything. So when she comes home, she can talk to you as a husband and not need a girlfriend. Women, your husband needs something to accomplish. He needs warrior men to be with. So he doesn't need to talk to you as a buddy, as another man. You need the language that you have to process. But you need to understand the other language to communicate. This is biblical. This is living with your wife with understanding. I'm trying to think if I can say this on video. I'm going to be, nope. Some things I can say in small groups and some things I can say in counseling. And the precepts can come out in video, but some of the ways to brand things in the minds and hearts, I'm so sorry for everybody watching this, I can't say. They're very effective, they're very blunt, and they're too blunt, but they work. The bottom line comes down to this, that if you want to see God do a miracle in our culture, first, you don't wait for your spouse or the other gender to get it. You get it. Secondly, you build then you start building the relationships around you with moms and sisters and spouses. And then, whatever age you are, the most important way to change a culture is to impact preteen and teenagers. What would happen if every 15-year-old understood what I just said? What would happen if every 15-year-old learned, and this is what I tell them, the way you treat your mom and sister is the way you're going to treat your wife. Do you know who it is that's usually to blame for a newly married man not knowing how to speak womanish? The mom and sister. Would you like to know why? With a husband and in womanish, usually you will hint at something. You're going driving by, you see Starbucks, a woman won't sit there and say to her husband, I want a Starbucks. Usually you say, Starbucks, wouldn't that be nice? Right, women? You know what I'm talking about? And a girlfriend would say to you, make it a relationship, oh, would you like Starbucks? Do you know what the husband hears? Well, sometimes she's going to want Starbucks, but not now where she'd be asking for it. Right, guys? And next time you do that and he just keeps driving, don't think he's being mean. Just simply say gently, you know what, I think I'd like a Starbucks. And watch as he turns around and takes you to Starbucks. But when you're talking to a son or a brother, do you hint? Or do you tell? Mom says, I want a hug. Sister says, I want you to drive me here. So a man grows up with moms and sisters who do not speak womanish to him. And here's the secret why. Do you know why? The mom owns the circle. I gave birth to you. You know, I own your circle. You know, it's the way it is. I'm going to tell you I want a kiss, I want a hug. I'm going to tell, and you can tell them bluntly and boldly, can't you? But he's going to grow up thinking his wife will, with the same tenderness, tell him bluntly, but she's not going to, is she? She's going to get hurt because he's not picking up the hints. So you know what moms and sisters need to do? Train him. Do a hint. He doesn't get it. Say, no, let me tell you again. When I say Starbucks, wouldn't that be nice? And when you say that, when your wife says that, what she means is, I would like for you to care enough to ask me if I want Starbucks. And ask me, would you like Starbucks? Now it's not me demanding It's you caring. So let's try that again, Tom. Starbucks, wouldn't that be nice? Mom, would you like Starbucks? Oh, you're a hero. Absolutely. We need to train the 15-year-olds, and let me tell you a secret. Your husband has never been trained. Tutor him with praise, with gratitude, knowing he doesn't get it. Tutor her with praise, with gratitude, knowing she doesn't get it. Men, the things I'm saying, how blind are you to these things normally? She is too. Women, how blind are you to the things I'm talking about for men? He is too. But we think what is so obvious to us, the way I describe it, is that we're colorblind in each other's language. There's five doors. Sally says, go through the red one. They're all gray. And they keep changing places. The red was two over, now it's five over, you know. And she's saying, the red one, what do you mean you don't get the red one? I just need her to say, go through the one on the left. Go through the middle one. Just understand, I need a little tutoring. If my heart is there, then have compassion. And I need to do the same thing. I don't say to her, go through the red one. How many men have told women, you're not respecting me? Women, what does respect mean? Is it confusing to you? You want it really easy? In 6 minutes? Respect is the exact part of a man's soul and heart that cherishing is to a woman's. You don't have to earn it. If a woman has to earn being loved, is it love? Respect is not letting him do it his way. In fact, in counseling, I can tell a man with respect, you are a good, hardworking man that wants to love his wife. And then I can tell him 10 things he's doing wrong. And he will feel respected, and I can tell him he's wrong. But he has to hear my value, that he's not wrong and worthless. He's awesome and wrong. Guys, do you agree? And I will have couples come after 5 or 10 times, and they're stuck on respect and cherishing, and I'll simply say, wait a minute. You guys have come here 10 times. Every time you come here, I tell you how wrong you are, and you still like me. Why? It's because I see him with awe. I treat her, I put her in the circle. If you cannot, and here's, you want a really simple secret for love and respect and cherishing in a hard time in marriage? You don't have to love or cherish their fleshly nature. Because that's not who they really are. When you die and go to heaven, does your fleshly nature or the godly new person go? You have to love and cherish the godly new person. Can you look at the godly new person in your husband and respect that? Can you look at the godly new person in your wife and cherish that? If you're looking at their fleshly nature, you're stuck. Even if they're walking in it, are they happy in their fleshly nature? Are you happy in your fleshly nature? No, it's not you. Do you see that? It's not them. But there are times when I'm arguing with Sally. Understand, I'm not perfect. Everything you're hearing from me are things I desperately needed and need. This is not some awesome spiritual man that's learned it. This is somebody who had to learn to duck when the rocks were coming off the cliff of life. And so there are times when I'm sitting there talking to Sally and I am stuck. But I'm miserable because being stuck and selfish and God doesn't really exist at that moment, I don't like who I am. And there are times I will humble and change, not for Sally, but selfishly because I don't like who I am. Now, a second after I humble and change before God, because I don't like who I am without God and with the flesh ruling me, a second later, I humble and change because Sally's worth it. Okay? But now, I don't start there. And she's not happy there. So respect the godly person. Speak to the godly person. Cherish the godly person. You have to close your eyes, talk to God, open your eyes to see them through God's eyes, and talk to a son or daughter. Do it. But whatever they're doing, God has commanded us to love, to cherish, no matter where they are. And here's the secret. When I love, I get to be in the presence of God. When I'm selfish, I don't get to be in the presence of God. When I love Sally and she's stuck, I'm in the presence of God, and she may not be. Who wins? There are times when you're stuck and I'm selfish, and I think if I humble first, she wins. The truth is, if I humble first, I win. And then I want her to humble, not so that I win, I want her to humble so she's free. Whole different reason, isn't it? But I don't need to make her humble because I can lead her to humility. We're coming to an end right now. We're gonna pray. I'm going to ask God to open doors and bless you. And every time you have a little situation that comes up where you can use what I'm talking about, take a baby step. Prove me wrong or right. Don't take it as an idea. Prove it wrong or right. And if it fails, talk to somebody who you see doing it right to find out how to do it. We can change our culture with simple precepts like this. Abba, I come here for every family here and watching, that they will know your power, they will see your miracles, they will understand their husband, they can respect their wife, their husband. Do a miracle, because only you do miracles. B'Hashem Yeshua HaMashiach. Amen.